I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Are you familiar with the Chode? It's a...
In the medical definition of... I don't believe it's a medical word, but it refers to a thing that could be medical. It's a small penis, right?
Well, I don't think it's classed as small. I think it's misshapen.
Oh,
and it's a word that I love the word, but I've got no reason to use it on a weekly basis. So I only found out about chodes about a year ago from that TV program where people reveal themselves completely naked and then go on a date.
Oh, that's, Naked Attraction.
That's right. That's nearly always an unsuccessful attempt at partnering.
But to be honest, I've never watched that show. I've seen little bits of it, but
oh well, I think you ought to.
But realise the choice of phrase there. I've seen little bits of it. It's not. I didn't mean that like that. So, but
the reason why I'm mentioning the word chode at the beginning of the podcast is because, you know, that the multiple shapes and sizes of gear shifters on cars through the ages.
Hmm.
Have you noticed how sometimes the ratio of kind of gaiter to length of stalk, as it were?
You can say shaft, it's all right.
Shaft. So sometimes it's a very stubby affair, semi-buried in a gaiter, certainly old cars, some of them were very heavily upholstered gaiters. Now,
I used to call, for some reason, when I was a kid, I think it was a mate of mine at school coined this, the sunken pudding, for some reason. You know, like, a great example of the sunken pudding gear shifter is the Porsche 944.
Oh, yeah, that is a great
where
one.
Where the gaiter doesn't extend like a little volcano. It's a bowl almost, leather bowl.
It is. It is a leather bowl. So actually, the more you're describing it, the more I'm thinking.
Something you buy from Pervy Habitat.
I'm actually, the more we're discussing it, the more I'm thinking I might have got my terminology wrong. I'm not sure that means it's a chode shifter, because I'm thinking that chode is apparently a very wide, very short affair, but the width, I think we're talking more about the sort of the baggy surplus material of the gaiter. Isn't that more a sunken, a buried penis syndrome? I think it could be. Anyway.
What you're describing is that this. An ex-girlfriend of mine once told me that she had a dalliance with a gentleman who, when they got to a pants-off situation, revealed his old chap to be, and I'm quoting now, like a can of Coke. And apparently my ex immediately said to him, that's not coming anywhere near me.
No way, no.
Yeah.
Oh, and, no. Oh, gosh.
But the can of Coke descriptor has haunted me ever since, and I was told this over 20 years ago. So, you know, some things live in the memory forever.
They do. Well, that's why you need to hire the private investigator, Chody Kidd, who will make sure that you never fall into a can of Coke embarrassing situation. Anyway, well, listen, no offence to Jodie Kidd. She's got a fantastic YouTube channel, extremely high production values. But going back to chode shifting, I remember my Honda S600 that I had to sell. Mm-hmm. Lovely little car. Sweet, sweet car. The one that I couldn't actually shut the door on properly on the driver's side because of my right knee. But anyway, that had a very, very, very tiny shifter and an enormous amount of gaiter. The ratio was wrong, although the feel of the shifter was incredible. So we're not going to go down the road of the feel of the shifter, but...
No, this is purely aesthetic.
It's a purely aesthetic. It's purely aesthetic.
When you said chode shifter, perhaps based on my misunderstanding of chode, although I don't know... I don't know if either of us actually know what it means now, but now that we've got into the detail. But I was thinking you meant like sort of sunken, stubby ones, like an original MX-5.
Yes, a perfect chode shift.
Tiny little stubby knob-endy thing, sort of sunken in a bit.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's a strong contender.
Sunken shifters par excellence. Many TVRs.
Oh gosh, yeah, TVRs, aren't they quite? They're quite liberal with the gator, aren't they? It's almost the sort of NBA awards suit amount of surface material.
Yeah, that's basically there's a 4-person tent's worth of leather sort of slung into the transmission tower
for a 3-inch shifter.
Yeah.
It is, like you're saying, it is a leather-stitched salad bowl arrangement of which there's like a thumb sticking out, like a children's thumb.
I mean, I haven't looked this up. I'm imagining in my head the shifter on, say, a Griffith or a Carmier or something from the 90s.
Yeah.
You could keep a couple of apples and some citrus fruit around the gear lever at rest.
There we go, you see. It's people moan about older cars not having cup holders, and that's the case. But maybe inside the surplus gator fabric, you could store. You go, oh no, I've got stuck in a traffic jam. I got stuck in an emergency traffic jam yesterday, and I thought, if only I had some of those sesame snaps and a banana inside the gator. Brilliant.
Ooh, I've just looked it up.
Yeah,
Griffith. We're misremembering this then. What the Griffith has got is, and it is very NBA award ceremony suits. It's got a huge amount of sort of rumpled up leather. It looks like it's sort of,
has
the
it?
Leather's like piled around the shifter. The shifter ball and shaft is probably about 6 inches long, but you only see the ball because it's then they've just sort of scrunched a load of leather around it, like they're trying to hide it in a really khaki way.
Is that Jody? Is that Jody?
There's another picture here of a Griffith 500. That's better. The leather's better finished. There's less of it.
There is a sort of bowl.
But it's not a fruit bowl. I misremembered the fruit bowl.
What about a Cerbera?
Let's have a look.
Surely
a Cerbera interior. Maybe that's got... No, same sort of thing. Just, yes, a huge amount of what looks like offcuts of leather. Just sort of...
The world of leather
it, around in a sort it. Of khaki way that you try and hide something before a visit from royalty. It's like
you've broken something on the windowsill, so just put the curtains all around the windowsill.
Yeah.
Just hang them a little bit.
Hang on. Here's a Cerbera interior, and this has got a much more, I wouldn't say tight fitting gator. The gator is still, but it's not as baggy, maybe because it's a later car. They'd gone with they're following the suit trends of the day. So the shifter gator is less baggy, and there is a distinct sort of bowl at the bottom that you could definitely keep some nectarines in, I think.
Nectarines. So I invite any listener who bothers to listen to this horrendous podcast where you think it's going to talk about cars and it talks about 10%
of cars. We are talking about cars.
We are, but unfortunately we're weaving in content about...
Inevitably,
sort of buried penis syndrome in the centre console of your car.
Yes.
That's it. So I want to know, what is the ultimate chode shifter or buried... See, again, maybe we don't know the correct terminology here, but buried penis syndrome of a manual shift car. Because then we have to weave in another genre of a shifter, which is normally reserved for the auto box, which is the... Which is the broad-headed, the Cobra. The Cobra head shifter, we've discussed this before, I think, haven't we? Where it's very, very wide top, quite a thin base. And, of course, it has a button in the side or the front to activate from park to drive, etc.
A T-bar.
It's either a strict T-bar, but if it comes out into... I've seen ones before. In fact, my Tokyo Taxi Cedric, I think, has a bit of a Cobra head. And I think I remember the Hyundai XG30 having a particularly good King Cobra.
It might have. It's funny because I do associate that sort of Cobra head style with Japanese car companies. I think the Honda Legend...
Did that have a Cobra head?
Second generation had a quite remarkable Cobra head. Because it was very long as well.
And do you know what? It just sounds like, again, an ultimate fighting thing. Cobra Head versus Chody Shifter.
Chody Shifter? What, the not, F1 driver?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he lends his farm to Chris Evans every year so he can come and trash it with a load of tents. That's right, Chody Shifter. Oh, gosh. Sorry, apologies.
Well, I won't be able to look at him the same way, but that's fine.
I never knew that a very, very short, wide penis won the 1979 Formula One championship in a Ferrari. But anyway, that's why you tune into this podcast, is it not?
Okay, I'm just going to send my search history to ribbons by searching Chode. It's not coming up with anything. Why is that? Have I got?
How are you spelling it? C-H-O-A-D?
C-H-O-D-E. Is that not right?
Well, I don't know, Richard.
Do you know, it's not doing it. For some reason, it's still showing me pictures of TVR. Maybe that's what happens when you search for Chode. I don't know. Anyway, it's not necessarily very good.
Do you think we should move on?
To just chat about...
about domes, about embarrassing looking short domes. But I think the 944 is a good one. But I invite any listener of this cast to what is the ultimate sort of buried penis syndrome gear shifter that you know of in a road car? Or a race car, frankly. I mean, there's some crooked ones. We haven't gone down the crooked route. Is it always the... which is the one where the lever comes out of the transmission tunnel and goes away from the driver? I think it's a Shelby Cobra.
Yes.
It actually bends away from the driver.
It's got a funny little dog leg in it. Yeah.
And it looks a little bit like, again, you know, I suppose you can reference male anatomy a little bit, but it's a sort of slightly crooked one, isn't it, that's maybe... it's been in the tanga briefs for too long.
I think also the people in the 60s used to put gear lever extensions on minis, didn't they, that had it, well, sometimes a bit crooked.
That's right, to bring it back to the driver a little.
Yeah. Also, many Alfa Romeos where the lever didn't sort of sprout directly out, sort of vertically. It came out at an angle.
Side sprouter. Yeah.
Side sprout. I think they tried to replicate that on later cars, but I'm sure there was a technical reason why they were like that originally, but it was always a bit unusual. Anyway, well, if you've got any thoughts on gear levers of any sort that you'd like to share with us, hello@smithandsniff.com is our email address. If you're a patron, you can send us a message through the Patreon. We will read it, even if we'll forget to reply, as often happens, but we do our best.
I'd like to find the ultimate Cobra Head auto shifter, the ultimate. What's unnecessarily huge? I remember the Fiat Panda actually has an unnecessarily large gear knob. It's huge. It's you almost have to extend
the current one.
I can't remember if it's the current one or the one before the current, but I remember getting in it and thinking it's a small car, and it's quite dainty in many ways, but it just seems to be that somebody, when they sent the sort of CAD file for the gear knob, I think they might have scaled it up a bit much. And then by the time they had them all moulded, they were like, oh, bollocks, just put them on.
It's the current one where it is. It's because they followed that, what do they call it, the squircle theme, you know, so sort of round-shouldered squares, essentially. And so like the instrument...
Cortex back.
Surrounds. Yeah, Cortex. And even the steering wheel on those original current-shaped Pandas was quite Cortex. And it is, you're right, the shifter is, it's got a sort of soft-edged square top, but then it's a bulky bastard. It's almost as bulky as, do you remember the Aston V12 Vantage manual?
Oh, that was a big penis
and
shifter.
And the Aston DBS of the same era had the same massive metal gear lever, and it was like trying to change gear holding a robot's head. It was horrible. You just kind of... although weirdly, it annoyed me in the DBS, and I loved the V12 Vantage so much that I sort of didn't care anymore. But it was a weird shifter.
Would you like to? Would you machine down a little JDM style kind of light bulb shape?
Ooh,
you know those
like on an S2000,
exactly like that. And I'm actually staring at one on the mantelpiece right now. That's going on my Insight. That's been made from melted down and then remachined. Plastic bottle tops. It's fantastic. Company called Toxic Knobs on Instagram. Honestly, it's not about dicks. It's actually about gear knobs.
Yeah, that's good. It's nice. Now, it's kind of apposite that you mentioned the gear knob on the Fiat Panda. because I was talking a few weeks ago about the Panda 100 horsepower.
Oh, really? I hadn't realised. And on the live,
I mentioned it.
The live event
and
as
on
well.
The live thing, when the Fiat Panda 100 horsepower mafia turned up and tried to bully me into buying one. And the strange thing is that it worked because I've just bought a Panda 100 horsepower.
Have you really?
Picked it up yesterday.
You've succumbed. Is this
succumbed.
Is Stockholm syndrome?
I know.
Isn't
well,
it?
I realised this. I've mentioned on this podcast two cars that I've sort of had an inexplicable craving for. And the first one was a supercharged Range Rover. There was no logic to it, except we sort of did need a new family car. And then I went and bought one of those. It's almost like by saying it on the podcast, it's like going over a pencil mark with ink. It's stuck.
I'm trying
to make good on it.
I've got to think about what I say now on this podcast.
Well, I'm just going to be very wary of what I say. If I suddenly say to you in a future episode, God, I've been looking at Di Tommaso Panteras quite a lot recently. Just stage an intervention because I can't keep doing this. But yeah, I the thing about mentioning that I had a craving for a Panda 100 horsepower was that then I got lots of people getting in touch with me, many of whom were trying to sell Panda 100 horsepowers. And
did you buy one from someone who was touting to you?
Yeah. Well, it was a bit funny, actually, because it was a guy got in touch on Twitter. Well, he just sort of replied to a tweet, I think. And he said that he sent me a picture of two sort of in a lockup. And
what a hostage situation.
For sale.
Did he have a gun pointing at one of their windscreens and said, this one will get it if you don't buy it?
Give us money or the Panda gets it. And then it turns out he just refurbed it with a mate, and it was his mate's car. So he put me in touch with his mate, and we had a bit of a chat. But I couldn't really justify buying anything unless I sold something else.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, that's fine. But then I sold a really nice watch that I was trying to get rid of. And that liberated some money, and that was all the excuse that I needed. So I contacted this bloke again and we agreed a price, and I went and got it yesterday from this locker, which is actually a unit on a farm. I won't say where because I'm sure he'd appreciate me not, but it's a brilliant setup. You'd have been really jealous of this.
Oh.
It's this guy, and I think there's five of them, and they pay what I gather is a pretty, you know, sort of token amount of money to rent this unit, but they've installed a two-post lift. They've got all sort of space to store loads of cars. There are loads of interesting things in there.
I love these car storage syndication setups.
The setup. They've got a fridge. They were like, oh, it's like a cold drink. They've got a fridge full of drinks, partly because apparently it gets incredibly hot in the summer, but so you need refreshment. But yeah, they've got a little desk with a computer on it, so you go online and order parts for the cars you're working on. And yeah.
Look at TVR Cerbera shifters.
Yes,
for example,
exactly.
With all your mates cuddled
what are we talking
around.
About again? Go online and have a look. So I went and picked up the car from there because it was a bit. This bloke was a bit of a panda rescuer, and he found this one. It was broken, and it had been owned by what sounds like an idiot. And he covered it in stickers and broken the suspension, and the pipe had popped off, and it dumped all its coolant. And he was too feckless to sort it or get it sorted. So this guy swooped in and bought it off him and basically did that most admirable of things, the James May style, return it to stock.
Oh, nice.
So he stuck OEM dampers and suspension bits on it and taken all the stickers off and refurbed the interior a bit because the seats were split, so he'd put a new back seat and a new driver's seat in and stuff. And so it's not far off your sort of ghetto Boxster ideal, in that mechanically it seems pretty hearty, but cosmetically it's a bit scruffy on the outside. You know, the paint's not perfect. It's quite swirly. It's black.
Yeah.
It's quite swirly. It's got a couple of scrapes in it that are down to, you know, below the paint. And it's got a dent in the roof and things. It's stuff that you'd only notice when you get up close, but it's like...
That sounds like a good candidate for a bit of paint correction.
Well, I'm wondering what to do about
swirly
it.
Swirly black stuff. You can rescue it. There are detailers that apparently listen to this podcast. I know of at least two. They can shed some light on this.
Yeah. Well, there's your mate who gave me some of that car care stuff, that sort of... hardcore things
hardcore things. A few uppers, chemicals. Few downers.
So I was thinking I might go out and have a little go at the paint when I've got a free moment and just see if we can bring it. It doesn't look bad from a distance away. The thing that annoys me more is it's got, the wheels aren't black. I mean, I don't normally like dark-coloured wheels, but they're okay because they're sort of, they're grey.
They're graphite the same colour as the bodywork.
Yeah, they're graphite. That's it. That's the colour. And they look good. I don't mind them at all, except, of course, the front ones have been curbed slightly, and, of course, that just looks gash because you can see the silver where they've been rattled against a paving stone.
Well, so, get them refurbed.
I know, but, well, I could sort of feel like I could just touch them in a bit myself, except I don't know the exact colour of the wheels. So that leads you to... So here's the thing. I'll put this to you. I'll put this to the listeners as well. Is what do I do with this car? Because I've sort of got two options here. It drives very nicely, by the way. It's like the fundamentals feel good. It pulls well. I went and picked it up from near London yesterday. And, I mean, they're not great motorway cars, but actually it got me back again. No problem at all. It just buzzes along. It's fine. It was £2,000. So it's like, it's one of those things where you go, if I end up getting a bit giddy, because I thought, yeah, I'll have the wheels off it and I'll get them refurbed. And maybe I can have them like that lovely light gold, like on you can get on 911s now, because that looked brilliant with the white, with the black paintwork. And I was like, hang on, how much does it have to have your wheels redone? That's you kind of end up spending like half the value of the car just on the wheels.
You can.
It does need new tyres, not urgently, but it kind of needs new tyres. I'm a bit picky about tyres. I would rather kind of go OEM or high quality near as.
If this is a
ditch finders.
No, if this is a corner monster, you could get some quite sticky tyres on it. Because if you're not going to do tons of highway mileage, as it were, you want it to be a corner monster, don't you?
Probably, yeah. Although I'd like a bit of give because they're so darty and sort of small.
Darty and small.
Darty and small. Coming up.
Please welcome. Oh. Yes, I was going to say. Freshly back from their tour of the Algarve. Here we have Darty and Small.
Darty and Small. Britain's most whimsical musical duo. It's a funny one. I don't know. That's the thing. Because a part of me goes, right, I'm going to completely go to town on this car and make it absolutely brilliant and really tidy. And then there's a part of me that goes, no, don't get carried away. Enjoy it for what it is. It's a cheap bit of fun. Just zoom about in it.
That's the thing. Do you know what? You're describing it. It sounds great, by the way. Panda 100 HP in black. It sounds a bit like my Insight, where it's wearing its mileage a bit here and there. It's telling a story with its bodywork, but it's got loads of life left in it. And the fundamentals are, and I took it out the other night as well because I'm still not doing long journeys in it because I just had a few niggles that irritated me. I took it out 70 on the motorway for half an hour or so. Some hard braking, and it's just brilliant. That car, I keep coming back to it, effing brilliant.
I'd love to have a go in your Insight sometime, because I haven't driven one since they were new.
Well,
actually, now here's an interesting thing.
Please do,
I'd like to try your Insight, because what I remember not liking about the Insight when it was new was that the ride was very hard.
Yeah, it's just, well, I mean, I've got to, can I put new dampers on the back before you drive mine?
Yeah.
I've bought some aftermarket.
I'm coming over tomorrow though, so chop chop.
Stop it. I've bought some adjustable dampers that have been developed purely for the Insight, because the thing about the Insight is at the back, I think it's a weird one. It's the suspension's quite hard on the front and it feels a little soft on the back, and it's only because it bottoms out really easily. But I think that's actually not the damping. I think it's the springs. So what people do, and I might have mentioned this, if I apologise if I have in a previous podcast, is people change the springs to Deomatiz.
Yes.
I think it's first generation Deomatiz, which apparently are slightly stiffer, but not that noticeable, but they stop the thing from bottoming out. And then you put springs from, bump stops, progressive bump stops from a Deomatiz, which helps. And then I'm putting some adjustable gas shock absorbers on it, and I'm really looking forward to that. But when you consider it, last week it clicked over 320,000. I actually had to do that sad bastard pull over, take a photo, pull back onto
that's
the road
allowed.
Thing.
It's very satisfying when that happens.
320.
The reason I'm curious about your Insight and the ride is because I remember it not being great, but then I remember the ride on the Panda 100 horsepower not being great, and I thought, I know this car, before I picked it up, I thought, I know it's back on factory spec. springs and dampers. So, but a lot of people switch out at least the rear dampers for Koenigs or Bilsteins. And then also people put Fiat Coupe bump stops on it, apparently. And these are all things to sort of sort out the ride. So I thought, these are things to bear in mind. I would be keen to try these out because I do like a nice ride in a car. And I feel like I'm buying a car that famously had a terrible ride. It's not terrible.
Isn't it?
It's absolutely fine. It's not, you know, Rover 75 smooth. But what's weird is it's good. It's sort of like firm but controlled, like, you know, good Porsches and BMWs are. It's not crashy and it's bizarre. I was like, have I changed? Has the car changed? What's going on? Is it that cars generally ride worse than they did 10, 15 years ago?
I think cars have got firmer. You know, the sort of your idea of a comfortable car, like a family car, non-sporting credentials, is definitely firmer than it was a decade ago.
But I just think I have no urgency. I mean, granted, I've only driven this car for one afternoon, but on that initial acquaintance and expecting the ride to be absolute dog shit, I don't think I need to do anything to this. I think it's fine. I think it's, you know, I'd be interested to try some changes, like maybe try another one that's had stuff done to it. But
yeah,
I'm not in a rush. I thought it's like, that's going to be job one, sort the ride out. And I just don't think, because weirdly, when they were new, I looked at buying one. I was very seriously thinking of buying one. And I was on a Top Gear shoot somewhere where we had one of those suspension wizards from Lotus was around.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him about it. I said, I'm thinking of buying a Panda 100 horsepower, but the ride is really not good. Do you think there's anything I could do to sort it out? And he was like, well, I've not driven one. I've not been underneath one. But, you know, it sounds to me from reading road tests, there's not enough wheel travel. So I reckon your best start would be with some higher quality aftermarket dampers. And then you need to start looking at the springs and the bump stops. And you know, he was like, you know, if you buy one, then, you know, you need to just get someone who knows what they're doing to have a little look at it. And I'm sure there's things you can do they haven't done from the factory because it's a relatively cheap car and they want it to feel kind of sporty.
It's good when you get it right, I think, or when someone else does. I mean, I tell you what, you can drive my Insight shortly, and you've always got to bear in mind the mileage in the back of your mind, because I don't know what it drives like compared to a 40,000 miler, because I haven't driven one for a long time. But I'll let you drive my Beetle as well, because I feel like my Beetle is driving the best it's ever driven since I've owned it.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. I think it's just fine. Again, it's bodily, you know, poor thing's a bit shabby, ignore that. But mechanically, I think it probably drives the best it has. It's got good new Continentals on it. I've replaced any bushes that were a bit cack. All the brakes, it's been converted to dual circuit brakes. Every line, every hose is replaced, reconditioned calipers and new ignition. Oh man, my brother rebuilt the carb, stripped it and sonically cleaned it, and then they built it, didn't they? That's what he did.
And it was giving it the old sonics.
Oh, so I need a sonic. So, you know, if we have a habit of mentioning things on this podcast that ultimately we end up with, I'm going to put out there two things. I want a really good sonic cleaner. Okay. And I want an absolutely, like, ridiculously cheap deal, lease deal on a Hyundai Ioniq 5.
Oh.
Please.
That, I feel, is more of a pipe dream.
It is.
Lease deals are only going one way at the moment, aren't they, because of your interest
rates? I know, and I'm annoyed because I want an Ioniq 5 and that I see them around and they still are impressing me. And you know what we're like. We're fussy gits, us motoring journalists, but I desire one still really badly.
How long would it be if you got a sonic cleaner before you were just trying to sonically clean everything?
I think it would be, say, if I went camping for a long weekend without correct facilities for washing, maybe a festival, you know, like a post-festival scenario. I'd probably climb in.
Sonically clean yourself.
Yeah, do you know, like those sort of those walk-in open-door barrel baths that older people who have bad backs have. I'd sonically clean from the belly button down, just to shake out any nuggets.
Oh my goodness.
No, honestly, sonic cleaners are they do the work of everybody. You just switch them on and walk away. My brother said that they are just, for him in his line of business, they are just genius. They're the engineer's dishwasher.
Now, sort of local radio link.
Listen.
Since we're talking about cleanliness, explain to me why you sent me a message saying you almost trod dog mess into Gordon Murray's escort.
Oh, gosh. Right. So I was at Gordon Murray Automotive 2 days ago, the day after I moved house, actually, pretty much. And this feature had been organised for a very long time. And you know where they're based on this old British Oxygen site in Windlesham in Surrey? I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a very odd but exciting site where all the buildings look like kind of dilapidated early 80s theme park / leisure centre.
I always think it has got the look of an avant-garde leisure centre about it, hasn't it?
It does.
And in the pictures. I've never been there.
Oh, it's amazing. Like honestly, the problem is it attracts a lot of urban explorers, so their security is quite high. And, of course, Bristol cars used to be there, and there was a lot of abandoned Bristols about, which there aren't anymore. Anyway,
they auctioned them off. Auctioned them.
They auctioned. Okay, yeah, they did. They auctioned them off. And so we were, given the run of the place, we had a couple of hours with Gordon to look around his lockup and to drive his car. And it was really exciting. And then when he went back and carried on with his work, I was allowed to drive the car, and we were shooting the car on the premises. So there's loads of gardens, loads of lawns around this 80s leisure centre site. And I had to walk round from the sort of the basement garage of his around to the front. And there's a shortcut where you can cut through across the grass. But what nobody told me was that at night it gets patrolled by guard dogs. And unfortunately, dogs tend to do several things. And one of them is they make a bad mess and they don't take it away with them.
No, well, they haven't got hands, you see.
No, and I was wearing quite slender shoes on this because I was worried about pedal box width. And so I think, unfortunately, there's no two ways. Unfortunately, I trod in a terrible walnut whip about 10 paces before climbing into his own car. So I had to do, someone said I had to do the dog poo moonwalk. Picture the scene.
Moonwalk.
I'm basically outside the offices of Gordon Murray, and I'm on their lawn, and I'm doing a really bad dog's mess moonwalk to try and rid myself of all the grot off the soles of my shoes before I get anywhere near his vehicles. So that was not ideal. What was quite funny...
Was Gordon Murray actually there for this?
What, like on the day, or...?
Yeah, was he watching you as you sort of?
I'm not sure if he saw. I expect he was watching the CCTV of me doing the shitty moonwalk.
What the hell's he doing now?
But he was no. I had him for a couple of hours. We had him for a couple of hours to film with, and it was great. He took me out in the car, and we had a really splendid time. The weather was ace, and that's an upcoming video on the Late Break Show, special one. Two, actually. But when we first bumped into him in the morning, I saw that his Alpine was parked outside in his office. And he came out, shook hands, said hi, met the videographer and stuff. And he said, do you know what? He said, I've curbed my wheel this morning. I haven't curbed a wheel in years. And he pointed to it front near side on the Alpine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, that's gutting. He said, yeah, I'm really annoyed. He said, the problem was I clipped the apex a bit hard. And I said, oh, like what, were you on a racetrack? No, just my usual drive to work. But I'm used to going in a little bit harder on some of the apexes of the corners because I still feel like I'm driving my Smart Coupe. And he said, obviously, it's a much, much narrower car, the Smart. And he actually quoted both of the wheel track, the track widths of both the cars in millimetres, which which I thought was amazing. He said it. He just said it really quickly. And I can't remember them myself because I'm not as intelligent as Gordon Murray.
That's a four-figure number.
Yes.
Being effortlessly quoted.
Four-figure numbers. Two. And it was lovely. And then we carried on talking about this, that, and the rest of the day. But when we went into his underground lair garage, which is beautiful, the smart coupe is not in the main room with the display, but I did clock it. It's amongst all the sort of exhibition stuff they have and some like mules and bucks and stuff that's sitting around.
So he's still got it.
He's still got it. And it's under. Oh. I've taken a photograph of it, which I will put for Patreons in there. There, it's still there under a smart logoed car cover. And he said, because
nice.
He said to me, he said, yeah, I daily drove that car for 16 years. And I know we've talked about this car before, on you have as well. And I said to him, I said, listen, Gordon, that is a car I would like to buy off you. And he looked at me and sort of smiled. And I said, but I know you don't sell anything, do you? So it's unlikely, but I just want to let it be known that I would absolutely love to buy that smart off you at some point. And I said, has it ever had a short engine? Because I know they a lot of them do, don't they? And he said, no. He said, no, that's the original engine. He said, and I've thrashed that car for 16 years. He said, maintained it well. But yeah, so the GM spec smart coupe lives on.
I wonder if, though, in the back of his mind, he's thinking, when I've got a spare minute, I'm going to re-engineer some bits of that car.
Oh,
maybe give it a manual gearbox or try and sort out the gearbox a bit more. Maybe give it a little bit more power. Maybe try and take some more weight out of it. Because I remember talking to him years ago. We've talked about this in the pod before. I mean, when I went down to see him and talk smart roadsters because I had a long term.
Yeah.
And he was saying how there's bits of that car that probably add unnecessary weight. And he picked on the side rails above the side windows that you can remove to give it full open cockpit.
Yeah.
But if you've got the canvas roof, obviously you're just motoring that back and forth when you want a bit more fresh air. It's very rare that you bother to take the side rails out when you own one of those cars. And he was like, they could be fixed and then they could be lighter. So I wonder if he's sort of thinking, God, one day I'll make the perfect smart roadster. Because I bet he still loves it for its size.
He does still love it. He speaks very fondly of it. Yeah.
Hmm.
And it makes and going back to what you said about talking about cars and ultimately ended up getting them, I still want a smart roadster coupe. I still really want one.
Well, I think it's your turn to go and buy something that you've just mentioned on the podcast a few times because I can't.
I've just moved house. I'm sitting here in my rented bungalow, and life's a bit busy for extra cars at the moment. As much as I'd love to just go, yeah, let's pull the trigger on another one. And in the words of DJ Khaled, another one.
Let's drop the plunger on this one.
Yeah. Another one.
Well, actually, I haven't. There's a bit of my panda buying that I haven't told you about.
Oh.
My wife's away on business in the US.
Oh, she doesn't know?
She doesn't know.
Oh, you absolute flute. I've done this before.
Right. So, because, you know, we've not long moved house and we're trying to sort of slowly do up bits of our house,
yeah,
which, as anyone who's ever done this knows, is absolute money drain no matter how you try and do it. And so I sold this quite nice watch that I just didn't wear anymore, and I went, oh, sold the watch, got, you know, I told her how much she got for it, and she went, that's great, oh, that's that'll come in handy. And I said, yeah, I'm gonna sell a couple more, I think, as well. She went, oh, cool, okay. I mean, you're not gonna go and just buy another watch with them, are you? And I went, no, don't be silly. And I haven't. I've just gone and bought another car that I don't really need, but I was just quite fancied. And it's such twatty bloke logic that I've gone, well, you know, I'll save money putting petrol in the Range Rover. I could just drive around in the Panda, sort of disregarding that even in the Range Rover, £2,000's worth of fuel would get you quite far. That's not the point. It's also, you know, just it feels less bad for everything to do local journeys in a small car when the EAP's not around, which it often isn't because she takes it to work, but she's not at work this week. She's in America with work. And so I just sort of haven't told her.
Okay.
On the basis that it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Okay. Well, yeah, I have done this, so we can off air, I can talk about how that went down. That was my Honda S600. Yeah, that was purchased when...
And then you had it restored and then you realised you couldn't fit in it and you had to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, okay, not the greatest decision of my life, but it's a box ticked. And then I had to sell it because COVID and couldn't fit in it.
What I was going to say is, I won't wang on about my panda constantly, but when I was driving it home yesterday, I went for a snappy down change into second as I turned into a side road, and the gear knob just flew off into the footway.
Did it really?
Yeah. I knew that's how we got onto this in the first place, because you mentioned panda gear knobs. Yeah, it just flew off.
Oh my God. So is it a chunky one? Like I was describing.
It's a chunky, it's a fairly chunky fella, yeah. Not as big as the more recent pandas, but it's a pretty chunky one. And it just flew off. And so I put it back on and I was like, right. And then it started coming off again. I was like, memo to self, just each time you change gear, just, you know, make sure you don't just sort of like release your hand.
Put a thumb on the top.
So that it flies.
Put a thumb on the top as you shift.
But then I got off the motorway and I thought, I'll take the back way to my house.
Yeah.
Because there's some quite nice country roads if they're clear. And so I got onto the back lane, and immediately the first thing that happened, I went for a kind of speedy up into third kind of change, and the gear knob just flew off. I had to pull over and find it under my seat. So I need to fix
that. That's brilliant.
I'm just going to glue it back on, I guess.
Well, the perfect time to change the behavioural pattern of your manual shifting. My brother and I have this little in-joke from when we were lads. We used to lift car share to primary school with a chap at the bottom of the road who still lives there, actually, called Mr. Fitzpatrick. And he was a serial Citroen buyer. He was always into many GSs, many GSs. Mm. And, of course, you'd start it in the morning and you'd have to wait for it to rise up on its suspension and all that stuff. Yeah, but he was the king of shifting with the lever with two I'm just doing it now. I'm doing it as I said, two fingers. So your two longest left fingers at the base of the gear stick. So you never touch the knob. The knob is never touched. You do not touch the knob. So no knob touching.
Was he trying to avoid wearing out?
I to this day, we both don't know. But what we used to do is we used to make eye contact with one another when he did it. And then we'd get to school and we'd get to school. I'm just thinking about it now. I've never actually talked to anybody else about it. We'd look at one another and we'd go, what's going on? It's brilliant. And it was all Greg used to gesticulate to me with the two fingers like that, just knocking it from first to second. And we still do it now. We still talk about the Mr. Fitzpatrick shift.
Do you ever worry that you'll be on your deathbed and this will be the last thing you think about? You'll just think about Mr. Fitzpatrick shifting, and I'll think about an ex-girlfriend telling me about a man with a knob like that. And that'll be it right there. You'll just go, I mean, I suppose you won't be around to regret it, but at the same time, it feels like it may be a waste of dying breaths.
Yeah, knowing me, that probably will be the last thing I say. But lately, I've done lots of reflection. And I've thought to myself, you're supposed to leave a positive legacy in this life, I guess, aren't you? You're supposed to leave something for your children or for your friends.
Mm.
And I think, do you know what? If nothing else, I'm going to leave a hefty swag bag of useless podcasts that people can wade through at any point in time and go, oh, look, they're comparing like withered dicks to gear shifters. That's interesting.
How these people ever forge a career in any sort of media? Plainly buffoons.
And I
think
about
maybe
that.
We should just literally leave a legacy.
Oh, Subaru.
You know, one of those sort of like an Outback of some sort. Yeah, a really nice one, but just leave it parked somewhere and with a note in your will. Have it written into your will.
Should we fill it full of
artifacts?
In
the kitchen.
Yes. So a time capsule legacy.
Yeah.
Should we? It have to be ex-pharma spec, so it's really frilly and tired.
Oh, no, I'm thinking sort of an old money one.
Oh,
so
okay.
So it's tidy and well-maintained.
And
I mean, come on, this is your legacy you're leaving behind here.
Okay, so a clean legacy.
Mm.
And inside it, we will put lots of parcels of interesting artefacts that mean something to us.
Yes.
Maybe we should do a Smith & Sniff time capsule. They were really popular when we were at school, weren't they? Should we do it?
Was that one recently? They dug up one of the Blue Peter ones, but it turned out they hadn't sealed it properly. It was all sodden and foul-smelling inside.
Really?
Yeah, the contents were ruined. But also, it feels like they're being a bit cheaty now. Everyone's got very impatient. You know, they're digging up time capsules that were buried in 1980, and there's a huge swathe of the population go, oh, I remember 1980. And they're going, oh, wow, look, it's got some spangles in it. You go, yeah, I know it has. Look, it's got a picture of a dog. Yeah, we still have those. You're fine. It's not, you know, they're not from like the sort of 16th century or anything. It's all a bit too immediate. Maybe that's a sign of getting old, where I'm going.
Well, we should...
About, what, 5 years ago?
Well, if it's the Smith & Smith legacy, let's put one of those extendable concertina cardboard sunshades in the windscreen, and it says, yeah, don't fucking open this car for 40 years. Yeah. If you do, we'll do you.
Yeah.
It should really be a Ford Transit, though, shouldn't it? Fucking Transit.
I guess so. I've just gone for the double meaning of legacy.
Legacy.
But we haven't... We'll workshop this some other time. I don't know why I've thought of this, but this morning, just before we started recording, I was outside and I saw a VW T5 van go past, and it got a plate. The number plate ended in dub.
Oh gosh!
It was T, and then a number that wasn't five. I'm guessing T5 dub is taken, so it was a 2-digit number. And then dub. And what I've realised about those is I have like a parasitic opinion about those now. I don't have my own opinion. I don't really know what my opinion is. In fact, I sort of think I quite like them, but I have your opinion overlaid over mine.
Oh, no.
Your opinion has become the parasite on my opinion. So every time I see a T5, T6 van that's been modified in any way, I think of you and what you would think of it, and that's sort of what pops into my head, not anything that I think about them. And I just saw this van this morning and I just sort of went, oh God, Johnny would hate that.
Listen, look, I need to make this clear. I'm not anti any modified T5, T6 van. I think it's some of which, I think there's a lot of tastelessness around, whereas... Mm. In the olden days of modified Volkswagen Type 2s, there used to be some flair and some class. Mm. And now there's no restraint. I think there's some terrible decals and some appalling body kits, and and it has to end. Because
well, in fairness, this one only had oversized wheels on it, so it's fairly underplayed by T5 standards.
Yes, good. But I'd like Renault Traffic crew to up the ante. That's what I'd like. I really would.
The Renault Traffic scene really isn't much, is it? Although...
And they're good vans.
You see Renault Traffics with wheels from another make on them.
Yeah, you
and
do.
What is it? What is it that's going to bother me? Is it BMWs?
I can't remember, but how do you
feel
about that?
Do you know what I mean,
that?
Though? You see them around, don't you?
It's very... Well... It's difficult. Mm, it's difficult.
It is difficult. Hmm. It's a tricky area.
It is, because they're good wheels in isolation, and maybe they're good cars in isolation, but it's like it's a forced marriage situation where there ought to be more. It's a bit like putting different light clusters on another car, isn't it, back in the olden days? And if it was disguised carefully, you were like, bloody hell, that was a masterstroke. I didn't even notice that. But if it's very obvious, it grinds on you, and you go, I mustn't let this happen. But you don't want to...
Is it Saxo VTS and VTR wheels they stick on those older Traffics?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they're a rare car now, aren't they?
Well, yeah, but they probably weren't when people were doing it more. Hang on. Renault Traffic 1F.
Of course, Traffic. Yes, Renault
Traffic. The Renault Traffic. Well, that's not coming up. Maybe I'm talking horse water. I don't know. No, not seeing anything. I thought that would pop up a lot, but I don't know. Anyway, yes, difficult. It's the same way. There's a Renault Scenic that parks quite near me, and also a Suzuki Swift of sort of two generations ago, where they're both on very generic Halfords wheel trims.
Awful.
And it's awful. Amazing how... And they're also both in sort of flat, non-metallic colours.
Yes.
And it's amazing how the wheel trims particularly just bland out the car to the point of...
Irritation.
It's sort of fascinating because you kind of go, internal car designers at car companies, they earn their keep with the details which sort of work with the overall design. And when you take those details away, it robs the whole design of some pizzazz.
Pizzazz robbers.
Quite fascinating. Pizzazz robbers. Exactly. Excuse me, sir. You seem to have pizzazz robbed your Scenic there. It's fascinating. And the same thing, I think, putting alloys from another car company onto something, it sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't sit right because they've come from different places in a weird way. Maybe it's just a nerdish thing. A normal person wouldn't notice, but there's something off about it.
You know, we recently talked about his and hers matching cars on a driveway, yes, or something like that, in a relationship. Well, where I drop my kids off for the school bus, there are his and hers Suzuki Wagon-Rs. And one of them's red, but it's so faded, I don't actually think it's ever been washed properly or cared for. And I'm,
or washed too much.
Well, or washed with, I don't know, some heavy degreaser like fairy liquid, because they were told once that it was a good thing to do. And I keep, it's making my eye twitch. I really want to machine polish it, do some vigilante detailing on it to bring it back from to where it should be. Oh, and I was going to say, do you remember that thing was of Ayrton Senna driving the NSX around, I can't remember which circuit it was, actually.
The famous clip.
The famous clip of Senna pulling out aggressively from the pits in the NSX, and then there's pedal box cam and windscreen cam of him on it. It's not the Nürburgring, is it?
No, I think it's in Japan, isn't it? Yeah. Suzuka.
Yeah, it might be Suzuka, yeah. But
I think.
I never tire of it. I never tire of it,
no,
because he's wearing what looks like, I don't know, town crier shoes. And you know the type I mean, kind of like, do you know what I mean? Like,
hear ye, VTEC kicked in. Yo, kickhead in.
It's either that or Beauty and the Beast shoes, as my brother calls it.
Oh my god!
So he's wearing Italian town crier shoes, and obviously, being Ayrton Senna, he's on it in this NSX, fully on it, lit. And it's just, honestly, it's poetry on the one hand, but I'm just giggling at the fact it's like, dude, those, I just couldn't. I mean, they're not great shoes, but I mean, they're not hindering his progress whatsoever, are they? Because he's Ayrton Senna.
Oh, man. Oh, by the way, I have to say just a hello and a thank you to an Italian listener, Andy Bracco, who got in touch from Milan just to send me a couple of Italo Disco recommendations.
Oh, really?
Since we were talking about it, and I made that stupid track about the Fiat Uno. Yeah. So, and for some reason, I was just really chuffed. I was like, an actual Italian is recommending Italo Disco. It's like, I sort of had this suspicion that Italo Disco was a thing that real Italians simply weren't interested in because it's slightly crass. But no, well, clearly Andy's into it. So thank you, Andy, for that.
I love that. Thank you. It's nice to get international listeners calling in, yeah, and saying hi and spreading the word.
Spreading the word, spreading the love. We'd like to imagine we're global, even though, you know, we talk an awful lot of parochial nonsense.
We do.
Since we're talking about VW vans and by association, your opinions, I never brought up in the aftermath of our live show at Morgan,
yeah,
our journey back to the hotel when your trenchant opinion about air conditioning came to bite us on the arse.
Oh,
because Matty, the videographer, drove us back to the hotel,
yeah,
in that Caddy California.
Yeah.
And you insisted on turning the air conditioning off, and then the whole thing steamed up, and Matty couldn't see where he was going.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we came very close to just driving across a roundabout or something, and you steadfastly refused to turn the aircon back on again on principle. So we just...
It's con refusal.
We just turned the blower up, which made things even worse.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring this
and
up.
I was very tired, and I'd had a beer, and I just thought I was just going to sit in the back and enjoy this spectacle unfurling until we collide with a lamppost, because it was just comical. Matty going, I could just turn the air conditioning on, and you go, no, we're not doing that.
No,
that's not happening.
No, we don't
need to do that.
It's a bit like It's a bit like phoning a friend on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You try not to ever use it.
No. But it is like that in that it's a useful thing to fall back on if you need it. And in that situation, we needed to phone a friend. Our friend was the air conditioning unit in the car that would have immediately got rid of all the fug that was on the screen.
Did you notice
obscuring the driver's view?
Notice that when I turned the fans up to 7 or whatever they go up to on that car, did you notice that all that was visible were two nostrils on the windscreen? It's just two nostrils of viewing. Oh, look, it wasn't my finest hour. And I apologise to you, and I apologise to Matty, and I apologise to the caddy, California. Oh, Joe, it's gone back. No. Went back yesterday. I'm really missing it. I managed to extend its loan a little bit because I actually loved it so much. And I have filmed a review on it that isn't out yet. But I don't know. I've really got fond of it. We've had some times together, and it's really wonderful. Oh, I know what I was going to say to you was I'm sorry for sending you those pictures inside the Gordon Murray toilet WhatsApp. I don't know why I did that, but I realise it might not have been appropriate. I should have sent you probably... Oh, I think I might have sent you the picture of the coffee cup that I got given to drink coffee out of, the iStream cup. Did you see the iStream?
No, you didn't send me a picture of that. You sent me a picture of you having a poo in Gordon Murray's outside loo, but somehow the mug slipped through the cracks.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, yeah, the Gordon Murray outside toilet at GMA, next to the Ox, if you remember the Ox vehicle. Brilliant. Really, really brilliant.
I'll check
very,
it.
Very heavy door and heavy lock to the...
Really?
I noticed that. Very thick. But I think it's a historic building. It's an old clock tower that was a convent. So I think there's history to that.
If it's share, I think that's shareable, isn't it? I'll put it on the Patreon.
I don't care anymore. I mean, I live in a bungalow and I've got exceptional insulation in the loft, so I'm living the dream.
Yeah, don't get me started on insulation.
I've got really good insulation. I feel like my son put it perfectly. He walked in, and obviously the house is still unpacking lots of things, and he said, "Do you know, this is like a... It feels a lot like Grandma and Grandpa's house, this does." And I was like, "Yes, it does." And I said, but in a good way? And he went, "Yes, in a good way. In a good way. It feels friendly and warm." And it's like, "Yes, it does." There is a bit of Artex the ceiling, granted. There is a brick fireplace with a faux fire, but that's okay. Yeah. We can live with that.
Classic. Good. Yeah.
But it's got a carport, Richard.
Love a carport. Gone out of fashion, hasn't it, the carport?
It's a lesser seen thing, and I think this was factory fit when it was built, of this particular property, because the other ones, the other bungalows next, there's 8 of them I think in total, they all have identical factory spec carports in front of the garage, and I love it. I'm really excited about it. It's substantial, it's light and airy.
These are 70s bungalows.
Yeah, I'm going to say 70. I'm going to say mid-70s.
See, that's because I think you can chart the evolution of the car through the evolution of the garage and the carport. Because garages, you buy like a 30s, 40s house, if it's got a garage, it'll probably be too small for a modern car.
Yeah.
And then 50s, probably all right. And, you know, sort of, but then 50s and 60s houses almost certainly would have a garage if they're beyond a certain size, because people had cars, but the cars ideally needed to be kept indoors or they'd just go rusty. And they'd probably still go rusty even then.
Yes.
And then the 70s into the 80s, it's like, maybe you can leave cars outside. Maybe they're not as bad as they used to be.
It's totally true.
The carport was the good sort of halfway house. You want to keep the car out of the rain because it will still rust eventually, but they're not as bad as they used to be. A car can be allowed to get cold now because they've started winter testing them. And then we come to the modern age where actually, you know, garages tend to be, you know, on older houses, garages get turned into another room or a home gym or something like that because you can leave a car outside in all weathers like a sheepdog.
It's true. It's
the
so true.
The carport is a little guard dog hangover from a specific time when cars were getting a bit more reliable and a bit less rusty, but not totally reliable or rust-proofed.
And also affluent households in the 70s, they wanted to be able to go out in the morning to their car, not bother opening a garage door, but also not get wet, and probably not need to demist or de-ice their vehicle. And I have to say, I did it last night. I reversed the car right up to the back door and got my shopping out the boot, and it was raining, and it felt good. It felt like I was in control. It felt like I was...
Nice.
I'm having a partridge moment. Let me do that. And I would like to sign off by saying we still get quite a few photographs and mentions of Mitsubishi jet towel hand dryers in gents' toilets, which I do appreciate. I really do appreciate that. But
yeah, we like the jet towels. I would offer a small plea that you don't need to send us suggestions for Johnny's alternative shows, because we get dozens, nay, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Many the same, which is quite spooky.
Oh, really? Okay.
Some suggesting things we've already done, which is just inattentive, goes to the back of the class. But yeah, we get loads and loads and loads and loads of those, so we probably don't need any more, thank you. Pictures of jet towels, we've got plenty of those as well, but if you do see one in a good location, then why not? It still amuses me that people are taking pictures of hand dryers in men's loos just because of us. And it is always men's loos as well. I don't think we have a single jet towel
picture
from a female listener.
Surely there must be jet towels in female toilets. I mean, there can't be.
I don't know. Well, maybe this is a call to arms. The women who listen to Smith & Sniff, if you see a jet towel in a loo, take a picture of it, send us in. I mean,
it still
look the same as the one in the men's.
I met a lady who listens to this podcast at the Retro Rides Gathering last weekend. Yeah, the other weekend. So thank you very much. I actually don't know your name. I'm sorry, but we had a good chatter. And she was slightly offended that I thought that only men would want to listen to the podcast. So
anyway, it's very nice. If you are a female listener, then I don't know, send us a picture of a hand dryer or just send us a hi and we'll read out some messages.
I've been alerted to the fact that Mitsubishi have made other interesting things over the years, but one of them, and I didn't know this until this morning, and I've got to mention it before we go, they made a scooter in, I think, the 50s, called the Mitsubishi Silver Pigeon. I kid you not.
Seriously?
This was brought to my attention by somebody on Twitter called Alan Blackmore, who lives in Perth, Western Australia. And he said, that's got car pervert written all over it. And sure enough, it does. I think this might be even better than the jet towel. The Silver Pigeon scooter is quite something to look at. Spindly front end, a very, very large seating area, which looks a little bit like a Chody Dalek, I'm going to say. It's really quite an impressive machine. So thanks for that. I appreciate that.
Crikey. All right. Well, as ever, I'll try and find a picture and put it on the Patreon.
Silver Pigeon.
Speaking of which, if you'd like to support this channel, patreon.com/smithandsniff, quid a month is all we ask. If you're feeling generous, helps us to justify doing this, might help me to stop my wife leaving me when she realises I've bought a car we don't need.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to get in touch about any of the things we've talked about here or anything at all, hello@smithandsniff.com is the address. For now, particularly because the fucking gardener next door has started doing some leaf-blowing nonsense again.
Oh, no. What a stroke.
We should probably bring this one back down to earth. But before we go, I have three things to tell you. They are: one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Papal Rake Show, in which Johnny investigates the relative reclining positions of pontiffs through history. This week, Pope Gregory the 16th. He's about 35.6 degrees. If you find that total bollocks, it's because it is. And instead, you should watch The Late Break Show. Lots of excellent videos about cars and people who love them on there. Second thing I've got to tell you is I've got various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia 3. Why not? Did that one last week. Do it again. Please go and buy it. If you do that enough, I'll do a fourth one at some point.
I dare you.
And the third thing I've got to tell you is that the first ever episode of Columbo was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Well, bugger me, I didn't know that.
All right. Until the same time next week when we'll do all this again, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye now. Love you. And this is a podcast where we talk about things and cars and things.
Things and many other cars.
Yes. Things.
And also...
And also...
and knobs and gear shifts.
Gear knobs and knobs.